Hey, what's up? My name is Christian, and with us today on the Most High Show is Christina. She is a mental health advocate, and she has a personal blog where she's chronicled her journey with mental health and overcoming that and battling that. And now that she is in sobriety, she's letting us in on that. And today we get to have a real open, honest conversation about where she's at, what it's like going through the steps, and what it's like returning to a faith that stopped working for a while.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
So you found us on Instagram.
Yeah.
And so you said, what I love how you said this, I want to have you say it again. You said, you never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you mean when you never seen anything like this? Like,
so I've seen like blogs, I've seen Instagram, like micro influencers. That's kind of what I consider myself, but I've never seen like the combination of like a nonprofit, a media company, and then like a podcast. So I feel like you guys, I think it's just like a beautiful way to do recovery. And it's just, I thought I was excited about it too, because it's different. Like it's a new wave of recovery,
yeah,
which I'm loving. I do love AA and I use that, but I think it's just nice to see, yeah, this new wave of recovery. So I got really excited.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm glad you reached out. And
yeah.
Because that's the point, you know. The point is to engage with people where they are, and we're right. Usually on our phones, on social media.
Yeah.
And we've met so many cool people through Instagram specifically.
Wow.
And I've just got done traveling. I mean, you know, I'm traveling during a pandemic because that's just how I roll. And so,
right.
You know, but I mean, we went to Mississippi to meet Jared, who we met on Instagram, and we went and met with Erica, who we met on Instagram. And
wow.
It's really cool to see it all kind of coming together.
Yeah.
And the steps are like a commonality. I mean, that's the modality that I've used for recovery primarily. But I've also used, you know, counseling, religion and spiritual community, biological solutions. Uh-huh. I mean, I need all the help I can get, you know?
So if I can share this really quick, I am the same. I've used the same thing. And I said, as I was getting sober, I'm like, I just threw the kitchen sink at it.
Yeah.
So I'm very similar.
Yeah. So what was the reason? Why do you feel like you want to live a life in sobriety?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I am 31 and I had started drinking when I was 21 about. And I just didn't for the longest time understand that I was an alcoholic. I was kind of in denial, if that makes sense. And then I hit a personal low, as a lot of us do. And I just realized, honestly, like step one, my life was unmanageable in all aspects. And honestly, I was just miserable. And I knew, I'm married, my husband was like, I lost myself in alcoholism, like my personality, my drive. And so sobriety has helped me like rediscover myself. So yeah, I lost myself. And sobriety has been the best gift I could give myself.
What was the specific pain? I mean, what was the pain that was the thing that really pushed you into seeking recovery?
Yeah. So I have a mental health disorder, and that's why, I should add that too. You guys, I have a dual diagnosis, so I love that you guys do both, because I feel like a lot of places focus on one or the other.
Yeah.
But for the longest time, I was like, okay, it's just my mental health, If I take the right medicine, if I go to counseling, if I do all the things. And so I realized that the big part of my problem, you know, it's a picture, was alcohol.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I just reached, had a job that I loved, and this was 6 months ago, and I lost it due to alcohol. It just impacted every area of my life, and I spiraled. I got, I was a progressive. You know, I think some people start and they're just black out or, you know, whatever. For me, the disease was progressive. And it started to get in the last 6 months. Just, yeah, I was drinking every day and binges. And so.
Okay.
I was, yeah.
Binge drinking.
Yeah.
What was your alcohol choice?
Wine.
Wine.
Wine and beers. And like I'm from Cleveland, so we just have like a lot of breweries. So it's kind of like a beer snob.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So that those are some gnarly hangovers.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Wine, all the sugar and.
Oh my goodness, red wine is the worst. And I will say, one of the biggest things keeping me sober is just the lack of hangovers. It's just like amazing.
Right. Waking up and being like, oh wow, like I don't have to worry about what I did or didn't do,
yeah.
What I said last night.
Yeah. Where are my keys? How much did I drink? Where did I go? Yeah. All the things.
Yeah. So what do you think is the primary motivation for you to live your recovery out loud? Because that's a decision you seem to make. And I love how you're chronicling it and being very open about it through your social media.
Yes. You ask wonderful questions. So I started out in AA, like 6 months ago. And like I said, I saw a lot of amazing recoveries. So inspiring. But a voice that I didn't see was for people like me who were like a month, 2 months, 6 months in. And the people that are long old timers, as we call them, you know, were inspiring. But I was like, I'm just trying to make it a week. Yeah. Like, you know, so I shared openly at a month. I just felt comfortable. And I knew I had someone ask me this. They said, why would you share so early on? And I said it for personal reasons. You know, I had been sharing my mental health journey for years, like blogging about it, speaking about it. For me, alcohol was the one that I was hiding. Nobody knew I was drinking. And so the big thing is I felt like as a mental health advocate, I wanted to show up for my audience authentically. Because I kept saying, oh, I'm open, I'm transparent, vulnerable. But I was hiding this part of my life.
So
I just decided to openly share, and I wanted to be a hope for anyone, but for my audience and the people that I really want to reach out to is like sober curious and people that are early in recovery or people that might want to get sober.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, there's not much difference, right? I mean,
right.
In some respect, I mean, addiction is a disease, right?
Right.
And mental illness is I don't know if they would classify that as a disease, but it's the same thing. You have an organ that is dysfunctioning, right? And then it produces symptoms, right?
Yep.
So for somebody who is depressive or has anxiety, there's some part of your body, you know, whether it's a chemical in the brain or whether it's hormones in some case, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's some sort of functionality in the body that's not functioning properly, and then it's producing these symptoms, which is either depression, anxiety, or obsession to use or drink alcohol or drugs, right?
Right.
So it kind of is the same thing. Now, why do you think that, because usually it's the other side of it, it's the other way around. Why do you think you were willing to address your mental illness diagnosis before the alcoholism? And if you're comfortable, it sounds like you've already shared about it, but I mean, what was the diagnosis and what was your journey through that?
Oh, absolutely. So I, 5 years ago, was hospitalized for suicidal ideation, and I put a trigger warning out for this. That's just my big, you know, I'm going to talk about suicide, but yeah, I was hospitalized for suicidal ideation and I had a panic attack. I thought I was having a heart attack because I didn't know what it was. And so I was forced to, I didn't really have a choice. You know, it was like, okay, you have an issue.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so I got out of the hospital and my diagnosis was generalized anxiety disorder. And then, you know, if you know people that have dealt with mental health or, you know, you have yourself, it's not a linear process.
Right.
So I started out with generalized anxiety. Turns out I also had bipolar. And so, yeah, it just took a while to get the right medicine, therapy. You know, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't just figure it out. I always say it's not like taking a Tylenol where your symptoms are relieved.
Right.
You know. Yeah. So I identified that first and then wanted to share about it. Because I'm also, my background's in communication, so I'm just a talker by nature.
Yeah.
So I shared that portion, and then, but I stayed an alcoholic and in denial about alcoholism, and I didn't realize, I was just in denial. I mean, I knew, like, on the bottle it says do not drink, but I was like, eh, that doesn't apply to me.
Right. Right.
So.
Yeah. So how long was that process from diagnosis to getting the medicine that worked for you?
Yeah, it was about 5 years, honestly. Wow. I know. So I was hospitalized, and then I was hospitalized again about a year ago, again for the ideation. And I feel like I'm in the best place I've been in a long time, but that's also because I'm not drinking, you know, because when you're drinking, your medicine doesn't work. Yeah. So it's hard to, it's very hard to say. Maybe I would have done it quicker, figured out the mental health side, but I was drinking the whole time.
Right. Yeah. And that's usually what happens is people reach some sort of level of pain that they're no longer willing to tolerate.
Right.
With alcoholism or drug addiction. And then they have also had a mental health diagnosis. And so we had a podcast on this. I don't know if you got a chance to see it, but we talked to Britt, who's a friend of the show, and he is a licensed counselor and therapist. And so we were talking about this, that when people come into his practice, that his main thing is to first stabilize the addiction, right?
Mm.
And once the addiction is stabilized, because it's to determine then is the mental health diagnosis part of a result of the addiction, or is it there, has been an underlying cause, and the addiction is kind of a result of that, right? Like what comes first. And I like to use the metaphor that I like to compare it to my own, which is before I went into rehab, so I was a cocaine and alcohol user and pills and whatever else I could get my hands on. But I was diagnosed with high blood pressure.
Mm.
Well, of course I got high blood pressure. I'm doing cocaine all night.
Right.
So in rehab, I got to take my blood pressure. And then it's like, okay, then we realize, oh, yeah, you don't have high blood pressure. You're just on drugs. So now you don't need to be on blood pressure meds anymore.
Right.
And so with you being, you know, you're pretty early in the journey. So a lot of this is like beginning to like, you're kind of like in this place where, and I'm not trying to project this on you. You tell me this is true. But you're in this place where it's like things are coming alive for you. First time, right? Colors are brighter. The sunrise is better. The sunset is better, right? Like,
yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what that experience is like. And then let's contrast that with where the struggles are really, where you're really struggling right now.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's funny you said that. I didn't know that was a thing, but I really feel like that. It's weird.
Yeah.
Like I just notice everything. Like I'm present. I've been noticing like, I don't know if it's cheesy, but like the sky, trees. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Just because like, it's very strange. I'm also like a meditator, in sobriety, and like I practiced some Buddhist things, and I was like, oh my goodness, like mindfulness has changed my life. So yeah, I have 100% gone through that. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. It's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
No, it's. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It has been amazing. And it's cool to hear that. Cause yeah, I am early on. So like a lot of this, I'm just figuring it out. But,
now you're going through the steps.
Yep.
Do you have a sponsor?
I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What step are you on?
Yep. I'm sorry. What?
What step are you on?
Oh, what step? I'm three.
Step three.
Yeah. We haven't done it yet.
Okay. So what has been your What has your sponsor, how has your sponsor walked you through step one and two? What was the things you had to do?
Yeah, so this is related to what's going on now. I only was in meetings for a month and then COVID happened.
Right.
So it's been really crazy. But I came in at step one. I was like 100% like, my life is unmanageable.
Yeah.
So I think she got me through that. And then we, what's step two again? I can't remember. I should have a memory.
Step two is... came to believe a power greater than ourself.
Yeah. So I was at step one. So I have an interesting background. I was raised evangelical Christian, and I had walked away from my faith because a lot of it was very dogma, very like judgmental. I just didn't relate to it anymore. And AA actually brought me back to my faith because I loved the saying, a God of your understanding.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So number two, what she didn't, I mean, it was a combination of us talking, but I was very open to it because I had the background of God and spirituality, but, this is the first time that I realized I could make my own God. Does that make sense?
You know? No, absolutely. And I think like the thing with, I'm a practicing Christian. So I actually believe it and I actually try to live it. And, but it is a little bit Christianity, at least in this Western version of it, as we know it today, is a little bit like, this is what you believe. And if you don't believe it 100%, well, then you're out, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't have any questions. And if you have questions, then you're out. And by out, we mean you're going to burn in eternity for the rest of your existence. And that sucks.
That was
you.
My family. That's what I was raised with. Like, right. I was raised since when I was 5. And here's just a funny thing. I remember my mom being like, well, you need to go accept Jesus. And I remember thinking, like, what sins did I do at 5? You know, that was going to burn me in hell.
Right.
Anyway, yeah. Mean, so, yeah, I was raised like that. And I just remember thinking, like, I just can't. That doesn't resonate with me.
When did it really stop resonating for you?
Yeah. So I have never been to public education. And I bring that up because I went to a Christian college because that's just what you do. Mm-hmm. And in college, I just remember being like, I just don't understand. And, you know, I think college for a lot of kids your age is, or my age, was just like, you question everything, right? You're away from your parents. You're away from a lot of things. So yeah, college.
Yeah. So what was it that you saw or what experience did you have that no longer aligned with that belief?
Yeah. I think it was just a lot of hypocrisy, right? And a lot of like judgmental, you know, on people's on people's lives and stuff. And I just didn't resonate with that. And this actually, this is funny, but this is kind of personal, but I share it all. I lived with my husband before we got married, had sex before marriage, and I was told that if you have sex before marriage, your marriage is doomed, you're going to get pregnant, you'll have an STD,
right.
All the things.
Yeah.
I came from purity culture and did all the things that I wasn't supposed to do, and I had the best marriage I could ask for, like one of the best things in my life. So that happened, and it made me, like, it changed my world because I was like, wait, all this stuff that I was told that I had to do, and this would happen? God didn't strike me. No lightning bolt.
Right.
So that honestly changed the bedrock of my faith. It really did. Because then I was like, wait a minute. It made me question everything that I've been told.
So you had an authentic experience of what God's grace actually is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And then you were like, wait a minute. This doesn't match.
Right. Yeah.
Now,
100%.
So it sounds like what you did is what a lot of us do, which is kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's a terrible saying. I don't like I said that. I even said it right now. It's horrible. But we kind of just go, okay, well, then it's all crap. Then I'm moving on. Do you feel like that?
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
So here you are. You grow up with these handles in your life. And on some level, they're useful, right? Because, I mean, yeah, like probably at 12, 14, 15 years old, it's probably not best to be out there just filling every desire we have, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's useful. But then you kind of get to this point where it doesn't match up anymore. And what a lot of us do is we just kind of go, okay, well, it's all crap and I'm gone, right? Mm-hmm. So where did that leave you, right? Having this foundation in your life, having that bedrock cracked, where did that leave you?
Yeah. So, I mean, it led me to a very big loss of identity because I was in the church. Like, faith was everything to me. And I was taught, right, that God had a will for my life and all these things. So there was a downside because now I'm left with, well, now what? You know what I mean? Like, who do I live for? What do I live for?
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was dark, but it was just very almost depressing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was like, now I don't have anything to live for. And also, like, scary. I was like, because I used to pray. Look, I agree with you. I also don't want to sound negative. There were beautiful parts to the way I was raised, for sure. But like you said, I just threw it all away and didn't keep the good things. So yeah, I was very scared and depressed.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. That's what kind of leaves us. That's kind of where a lot of us get left, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So how much of that do you think contributed to your reliance on alcohol?
Oh my gosh. So good. A lot, because I had this void in my life. I moved to Virginia, didn't have a job at first, and didn't have a faith, didn't have a foundation. So yeah, that was a huge part of it. It was just, I felt lost. I felt depressed. I didn't know, no direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting you said that, because, you know, I think maybe you might think, you know, this, when you get sober, you start to like look back on what you did in your life. And I didn't realize that, yeah, absolutely. A lack of purpose and a lack of a God or spiritual, you know, a spirituality to support me. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And so
it's a huge part.
Yeah. And then here's this thing. You just, all I got to do is drink this.
Yeah.
It's and simple. Everything's better.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, the shame that's associated with addiction is ridiculous and wrongly placed, because there's just some of us that we're in pain. And so I've asked this question of people, like, is what problem did alcohol or drugs solve for you? Because it did. So kind of like what you're saying, like, you had this void, and in some way alcohol filled that void for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how much time do you have? No. I mean, alcohol filled so many voids. Loneliness, lack of community, lack of purpose.
Yeah.
Fear, you know, what is life about? You know, I didn't want to face that, because now I don't have this faith anymore where I believed that God had a purpose for my life, that I was meant to do something. I was brought here to do something. If I don't believe in God anymore, then where does that line up? So, yeah. Oh, my gosh. It fixed a lot of problems for me.
Yeah. So now when you're talking about you're working step two, you're working step three.
Yep.
But which is, you know, making a decision to surrender your will and life over to the care of God as you understand it, right?
Right.
Or understand her, or whatever it is, right? Like, so this is a big step for you.
Oh my gosh, huge! Yeah, it's like life changing.
Yeah. So, what does that look like for you? Like this surrendering over. And you said that it's as quickly as step two, you've been able to kind of go back to your, you know, your faith of, what do they call it? Childhood faith or your origin.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
you're not return. I don't think, how are you returning to it, and what's different about it and your connection to that now?
Yeah. So, okay. So your first question is, it's scary. And I think I'm going to wrestle with God, right? Like, let me have it. Yeah. I don't want to give it to you. I think that's pretty normal. And then the second part is, I am coming back to, again, the God of my understanding, the one that loves me, the one that loves everybody, right? The one, not the one that I was raised with, not the dogmatic, you're going to hell, you know what I mean? And so, AA has healed my relationship with God, and I'm able to create this new faith that's life-changing.
Right. And the big thing that the steps give for me, and specifically step three, we have a documentary on that really focuses on step three called Dog Island.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So I would recommend watching Dog Island.
Yeah, it's really cool.
But Richard Rohr has this book called Breathing Underwater. Have you heard of that?
Mm-mm.
So, and he goes through the 12 steps. Richard Rohr is a Franciscan friar.
Mm.
And so, and he talks about each step and equates it into Christian language.
Mm.
It's really powerful. And in step three, one of the things he says is that a person needs to be, it's the concept of congruency, where you're mentally, spiritually, and physically ready to be in this place, a kind of an alignment, to be in a space to truly activate this third step, right?
Mm.
So for me, right, with some years in recovery, when this step really kind of came alive for me, you know, I'm talking about, this is 6-7 years into recovery, right? And I've never stopped being a practicing Christian, but there was a level, right, that I wasn't at. And a couple years ago, when after reading this book and after this experience on Dog Island, it clicked for me. And part of it was a biological thing. I had there were some mental health issues I had that needed to be addressed biologically, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that was holding me back, because I can see the how the steps have come alive since I addressed that physical issue, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so whatever it is, what I'm able to do now with this step three is I no longer have to understand it completely. And I think that was a big step for me. And yeah. that's a big, especially coming up in the Christian faith, mm-hmm. that which is always trying to tell you what God is, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to say that, well, there's still a mystery mm-hmm. to this thing that we call God, right? Mm-hmm. That there's still more to be revealed. There's still more to mm-hmm. know about this. That was a huge weight lifted. Because like you said, like, you know that God loves you and loves everybody. And that's mm-hmm. that's enough to say, okay, I can trust you with my will, because at least I know that your intention is not to harm me, mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. though it might be painful. mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Wow.
That was beautiful. I just have to tell you, oh my goodness. I mean, that's kind of why I'm here too. I'm learning, right? Since I'm so new in sobriety, I love what you just said. I'm going to take that, because that was beautiful. Because like you said, in the faith that I was raised in, there was absolutes. Like, you had to know God did, you know, whereas I love that. You don't have to have it figured out.
Right.
There's still mystery to God, and that's okay.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we read that understanding as complete understanding, right?
Right.
Yeah. And right. it's just, you just got to understand enough of it to surrender your will over to it, right?
That is so good. That's freeing.
It is. Absolutely. So what's your, how have you been as far as obsession and cravings?
Yeah, good question. So like I said, I'm 5 months sober. Pretty normal. In the beginning, it was really hard. So I was a bar fly. I'm very outgoing. So for me, I never really drank at home unless I was pretty drunk and then kept drinking. But so I say that to say, when I got out of treatment, all the bars were shut down. that was a good thing for me. So with that, I actually was okay. I think the first month was hard. This is interesting. I just brought it up to my sponsor. So I got sober. I live in Cleveland, super cold. I got sober.
Yeah.
When I came, summer's here, and that was a big trigger. So I've been kind of working through that right now, because yeah. I love sitting on patios, you know. And so, like, Cleveland, it's a whole thing. It's like, oh, yeah, we can sit outside. We can drink a beer. So, yeah, I'm dealing with that. I don't know if it's both. It's probably obsession more. You know, I don't really have cravings anymore. But, yeah, it's just hard to pass bars and say, great, like, I know I can get – I'll have to figure out what – that looks like for me going out and, you know, being sober. But summertime has made it hard.
Right. Yeah. And that's a little more culturally and kind of the right. lifestyle you live. And so that's kind of changed. Like what they say, you know, the only thing that has to change is everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
People, places, and things.
Yeah.